Going to be reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12. And the verses will be 26, 27, and 28. The title of the chapter is Birth of Emperor Parikshit. And we were reading from is a whole long list of verses where the astrologers are doing the Jata Karma and pronouncing for the audition of Maharaj Yudhisthira primarily and the other Pandavas what will be the qualities of this child, because it's understood that the lineage of the dynasty has one person left, and that's Maharaj Parikshit, because due to the events of the Kurukshetra battle, after the Pandavas, all the sons of the Pandavas have been killed, and only the grandson of the Pandavas remains as the heir to the throne. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, your problem?
They cannot hear my problem.
What do I do? That's a nice table. So, Maharaj Yudhisthira, maybe put it right by the speaker. Oh, yeah, that can be done. Okay. Maharaj Yudhisthira, as the grandfather in place of the father, Abhimanyu, he's performing the duties that the father would perform. The ceremony, the ritual, the samskara is dutifully being performed by qualified brahmanas. Domya and Kripacharya are those qualified brahmanas. And so, along with the rituals, is this understanding of the qualities of the child. And then along with the qualities of the child, then a name is given. It's not just the name giving, it's understanding the nature. Prabhupada so many times speaking about this section would emphasize the point that Maharaj Yudhisthira was most concerned about was, besides this quality, that quality, tell me, is he going to follow his predecessors? So part of that following is, the major part of that following is submission. Because when there's submission and therefore following, then that's the foundation or the basis of all good features of character. Just like coming into that person. So in other words, potential may be there, but potential will be maximized when this submission or following of the great predecessors. Just like our acharyas, we are in the application point for us is we're part of an amazing disciplic succession. And I can say one of my experiences this time visiting in Mayapur, and heard from many of the devotees who attended that they had a much deeper sense of our disciplic succession, because we visited places where Bhaktisiddhanta and Gaurakishore Das Babaji and Jagannath Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur are the members of our disciplic succession. We heard about them, and prior to them, the predecessor acharyas, an amazing spiritual family. Amazing. I mean, extraordinary. And it's not like, as I mentioned yesterday, it's not like going back 5,000 years, so it's almost may seem so distant that it's too distant. So proximate. Amazing accomplishments. Certainly Srila Prabhupada's accomplishments, but the line from which he was representing, an amazing line of disciplic succession, personalities. And so, how can one manifest the potential of what that represents, whatever the qualification according to the stars and so forth that one may have? The fullness of that potential is this following, so, or stated otherwise, submission. Not imitation. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who personally performed this Navrata of not just 64 rounds a day, but 3 times 64 rounds a day for 10 years. It's superhuman. Who can do that? Who can do it for half a day? For a day? I don't even recommend you try it for a day. What to speak of every day for 10 years in the prime of life. Young man, prime of life. All day long for 10 years. It's just like stupefying. So it's very recent. It's since in the early 1900s. He was on another platform altogether, way up there. And then he became under the order of his father and his spiritual master, he became the Acharya. They instructed him. So he did. He didn't need to do any of that. He was beyond. But he came down from that position and accepted the order of sannyas, which means being regulated by varna and ashram, and he behaved like one in the varna and ashram system, although he was beyond it. Not just in name, in fact. Anyway, and on and on and on. So, how can one derive the best of one's life's potential? The indication the Prabhupada was pointing to with Maharaj Parikshit was, would he follow his previous great ancestors? In the case of elevated devotees, it's not like worship of the ancestors. That's not, because that's a type of worship. But following pure devotion, a life of, there's nothing in his life but Krishna. And the answer was yes. And because of that, the potential, again, each of us has some potential. Somebody can play mridanga nicely, and somebody can sing nicely, and somebody can worship deities nicely, and somebody can do this and that and other thing nicely, organize things and cook nicely and different things. We all have something that we can do. For the fullness of that something to come out, same point, this connecting with the personality of Godhead through the merciful representation that comes by his arrangement into our life, the fullness can come out. The full potency of the richness of our spiritual life will come out. I just received a realization letter from one devotee in India who was challenged with academic work, and he's in that stage of his life. And his realization of late is there's pressure to do the academic and there's a desire to do the spiritual, and there's no question, if there's submission on the spiritual side, there's no question of neglect or underperformance on the material side, on the study side, performance of, in the exam side. There's no question of neglect. It's a question of having, like, you know, a turbocharged state of consciousness and purpose for that. Because normally it goes the other way. If this is strong, then that's weak. You know, what's the use of this other thing? And we're going to hear in these verses about the detachment that was the characteristic of Maharaj Parikshit, detachment from material affinity. At the same time, he was such a powerful king that he took care of all the affairs of the state of the kingdom in such a super excellent way that all the citizens felt protected, which was the duty of the king. He wasn't negligent on this side, he was just turbocharged over here on the spiritual side. And because of that, he could do his duties so nicely. So the first verse that we're reading this morning, the brahmanas say, this child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of upstarts and the quarrelsome. Upstarts. It's interesting, there's a Sanskrit word for upstarts. Ut panta gaminam. Utpat. Like big disturbance. Utpat is a big disturbance. So those that are make big disturbances. Not like little innocent, but, you know, deliberate, planned, big disturbances. And the quarrelsome, Kali. Something that Bhakti Chumaraj regularly comments is that some situation arises where there's a quarrel, and he'll remark, this is the influence of Kali. We're in the age of Kali, and Kali's doing his thing, and quarrels and quarrels, and it's just the influence of Kali. And so how do we view that? First, understand what's going on, what's the root of the problem, and then detach ourselves enough from the problem to see the root of the problem. Then address the root of the problem. It's the influence of the age of Kali. It's nothing to do with the consciousness of a higher being, and then we just don't get involved in the quarrelsome nature. If there's something that needs to be decided upon or sorted out, we will sort it out in that detached manner. But if we're not seeing the root of the problem, we get drawn into the problem, we become part of the problem, we just become quarrelsome against the other party and the other party and take sides, and next thing you know, we're completely forgot Krishna. Just involved in the material energy, in that quarrelsome spirit. So the statement here is that the duty of the king is, one of the duties of the king, is for the sake of religion to curb, or he translates here, that be the chastiser of that influence. Go back to the first one. The child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. So it's one of the duties of a leader to create leaders. It's the duty of a king to create praja who will be qualified kings. Which, so Yudhisthira has that concern. And one of the qualifications of a king must be a leader, ruler, somebody in that position must be very wise, Wise like a sage. Wise like a sage because there are circumstances always that arise that require not just strength, but require wisdom. And where do you get wisdom from? It's not so much wisdom is coming from our education process. Wisdom is not coming from Walmart and Kmart. Wisdom is not coming from, you know, the marketplace. Wisdom is coming from another source. And for lack of association and guidance of those who have wisdom, it's hard to come by wisdom. And, you know, different people think they have wisdom or they have the answer. And then that brings in the quarrelsome spirit again. So wisdom is to go beyond that. It's saying, the battery's low. Here's what Prabhupada writes. The wisest man in the world is a devotee of the Lord. The sages are called wise men, and there are different types of wise men for different branches of knowledge. Unless, therefore, the king or the head of state is the wisest man, he cannot control all types of wise men in the state. It's not usual for Prabhupada to go in the direction indicating that a king is to control wise men. The king is to control wise men. Kings don't control brahmanas. But when the king should be taking counsel from brahmanas, and the king has to be wise enough to understand what is good counsel and what is not good counsel, and how those who are expert in this branch and that branch and the other branch can cooperatively pool their wisdom. And that is the sense of control. It's the opposite is things are out of control. Things are out of control. When you have different people who think they have the answer, just set it down. Different people think they have the answer, and then they begin arguing with another person who thinks he has the answer, and thinks he has the answer, and thinks he has the answer, and you have chaos. So a leader, I'll make this, because Prabhupada is doing it also, this is not just speaking about a king, and we don't have to think about it because there's no way in the world we're going to become kings. But it's relevant to us because each of us, as devotees, are to be leaders in society. Leaders in the sense of setting an example. Yadirasharati shreshtas tatat evi tarorjana. According to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's just a rule of nature. The rule of nature says those who are shreshta, they set a standard, they lead, they give the example for those who are not in that position, the evetarorjana, the people in general. So the intention of Srila Prabhupada to create this International Society for Krishna Consciousness was to create, in his language, a class of first-class men and women. First class. From something other than first class, to take the clay and make something durable. A first-class human being. And the first-class human being gives direction to the other parts of society. So we're all, like it or not, or it. You know, being aware of it or not, we're being trained to take that position just by being Vaishnavas. whether it's whatever the atmosphere, in the workplace or in school or here or there in society and neighborhood and civic, and being first class examples. So that's at least that much leadership. And there's also in our circles of moving about in all those spheres of activity, there's a kind of leadership that makes a devotee stand out simply because they don't follow the crowd. They're alert to principles of life and they move that path. That's leadership. There may not be 10,000, 10 million, whatever it is, people following that path, but they're clear about the path and they're moving on that path. That's also leadership. Self-leadership leads to others following, if the path is the path of truth. So all these points are relevant to us as well. So this position of wisdom is something that a leader must have. How do you balance different things? How do you see the prevailing principle and the direction to move when things are not so clear? Or there's different voices speaking different things. How does that come together for harmony and some convergence of will? Wisdom. How does wisdom come? The submission to the personality of Godhead and the following of the great acharyas. And Krishna gives that direction. Then Prabhupada comments, the next part of the purport is what is the root cause behind the dissension in the age of Kali? And he points to the neglect of basic principles of religion. And he points to these four items because it's spoken of again and again in this first canto. The symptoms of Kali are wine, women, gambling, and slaughterhouses. Wise rulers of all states should take lessons from Maharaj Parikshit on how to maintain peace and morality by subduing the upstarts and quarrelsome people who indulge in wine, illicit connection with women, gambling, and meat eating, supplied regularly by maintained slaughterhouses. So what happens in the age of Kali? All this stuff, or almost all this stuff, is licensed. Looks like the only one that's not licensed is prostitution. But the others, the government takes a cut, in essence. They regulate, but, you know, it's seen as a revenue source. The state builds gambling houses and licenses for liquor and so on and so on. There's rather than saying no. This event that I... There was an event just before going to India. I took part in an event at the Fisher Mansion where there was a founder of an international society of Gandhi consciousness. He didn't call it that. He has some other name. From Sri Lanka. And he has tens of thousands of people that are doing his thing. And just one note. When it came to the question and answer part, Adi Raj from Detroit, he's an author of cookbooks, Adi Raj cookbooks. So he's a you can count on Adiraj during questions and answers to say something about vegetarianism. And the opposite of that is, you know, protection of animals. So he raised his hand and asked this gentleman, he's a Gandhian Buddhist, Dr. Airy something, something, something. Since you're representing the teachings of non-violence, would you agree with that one of the principal acts of violence is how we view those around us, and those around us are, by any religious depiction, is the other forms of life in addition to the human form of life, and how we relate to those other forms of life will determine whether we'll have a situation of non-violence or not. And that, therefore, should be, to promote non-violence, there has to be advocacy for vegetarianism. What would you say about this, Dr. Ari? Something, something, something. And Dr. Ari said, a very short, normally he's like really talkative, but he gave a once half a sentence answer. He said, that would be very nice. Or something, that would be best if people could do that. He didn't say anything more. No advocacy of curtailing the tongue even for the purpose of nonviolence. There was silence in the room for about a minute, like, what happened here? And Prabhupada is speaking in the verse, the sages are saying, for world peace and for the sake of religion, so for world peace there must be this respect of life. If you're going to have peace, you have to have respect of life and the rights of living beings to live. So beneath the quarrelsome nature is these principles that agitate the quarrelsome nature in this age of Kali. So one of the ways to bring about peace is to see to these four principles. Now people hear these four principles and, you know, they say, you people are too strict. And we don't want that. We don't want strict. We want these other things. Prabhupada would often quote Lord Zetland when he was visited in the UK by the sannyas disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta, because Lord Zetland had some kind of government post in India during the British rule, and after the British rule he went back to the UK. So the sannyasis went to visit Lord Zetland, and Lord Zetland was appreciating their message and asked, can you make me a brahmana? And they said, yes, but you must follow these four things. That's all they said. And his answer was, impossible. And what we're hearing in the Bhagavatam is that's just basics. That's ABC. And without ABC, you're not going to spell or composition. ABC. And in the reference that's being presented here, without ABC, you're not going to have peace. You're not going to have... If the legs, the pillars of religiosity are broken, you're going to have irreligiosity. You have irreligiosity and you have chaos. You protect Dharma and you're protected by Dharma. Dharma raksha rakshataha. One who upholds and protects Dharma is protected by Dharma. Then you have peace. So, in the absence of that, like a refrain, Prabhupada writes, without this, how can they expect peace? And morality in the state. The state fathers, therefore, must follow the principles of becoming wiser by devotion to the Lord. by chastising the breaker of discipline and by uprooting the symptoms of quarrel, as mentioned above. Then he expresses the same thing in a very interesting way. He says, if we want a blazing fire, we need dry wood. Blazing fire and moist fuel go ill together. What is the parallel? Peace and morality can prosper only by the principles of Maharaj Pariksit and his followers. That there must be this dry wood is taking the moist wood and making it dry. It's taking this Kali Yuga thing called chaos and quarrel and bringing it to the position of these dry wood where it can ignite. The way of devotion to the personality of Godhead can ignite, without which it's not going to. It's in the background, it's not the essence of Krishna consciousness, but to have Krishna consciousness, the populace must be adherents of these principles. Or we have to somehow help people come to that platform. Comfortably and willingly, but come to that platform. So that the fire, the blazing fire of bhakti can burn up all the reactions of one's past material activities. So, that's one verse. There's two more. They're very closely connected in meaning and in message. 27 and 28. After hearing about his death, Maharaj Pariksit, speaking about, which will be caused by the bite of a snake bird sent by the son of a brahmana, he will get himself freed from all material attachment and surrender unto the personality of Godhead, taking shelter of him. After inquiring about proper self-knowledge from the son of Vyasadeva, who will be a great philosopher, he will renounce all material attachment and achieve a life of fearlessness. So, the refrain here is becoming completely, absolutely free from material attachment. And what Prabhupada explains here is that devotional service, what the practice of devotional service that we're engaging in, it has its external appearances, but the internal essence is it's practicing one's transcendental relation with the Lord. That's what Prabhupada writes here. What we're getting an opportunity to do is to do those things that we would do or will do in the spiritual realm, here in this realm. But it's not just doing things, but it's the consciousness of those things. And that the consciousness, the essence of the consciousness of devotional service is being in a relationship with Krishna. Doing all the things that we do in our relationship with Krishna. We're getting the chance to practice that. And when that devotional service is matured, practice, 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 and mature stage of practice is the attachment is very strong. The relationship with Krishna is very strong. And with that relationship with Krishna being very strong, material attachment slackens and slackens and slackens. It doesn't mean neglect of the circumstances, it means the expectation of happiness from those circumstances, because those circumstances don't bring happiness. People get frustrated when they're expecting happiness from the circumstances, and lo and behold, it doesn't happen. Something else happens. But when the expectation instead is the relationship with Krishna, that gets stronger and stronger and stronger than any circumstance. This or that. This side of duality, that side of duality. And it can change back and forth. It's fine. Because the opportunity for service is the essence. The relationship is the essence. as devotional service when it's matured. And so, Prabhupada goes on in the purport to say that that the start of that exchange with Krishna in devotional service was while he was still within the womb of his mother. By the Lord's mercy, he came. Not only he came and protected, specifically it described earlier in this first canto that the Lord deliberately showed himself before the eyes of Maharaj Parikshit, so not only he was protected, but he could see him in just a suitable size for that little baby in the womb of his mother, just like custom designed for that circumstance of Maharaj Parikshit within the womb of his mother. And when he saw, he was amazed. He understood, it's described, and he understood, I am being protected. And here is that person who's protecting me. And then suddenly he disappeared. So that beginning of his devotional service was still within the womb, and then it's not like it ended there. Okay, now I'm protected. He continuously, Prabhupada writes, he continuously cultivated that mood under the shelter of the Lord. His whole life, from the second canto describes, from his childhood, his parents engaged him in that way, as the royal family engaged him in that way. They worshipped deity form of the Lord, and so he learned deity worship by following the royal family, and he worshipped Krishna, a different form of Krishna than that which he saw within the womb of his mother, but another form of the Lord, and continuously throughout his life. Then came this notice. And with that notice, it was 7 days left. And so, the language that Srila Prabhupada uses here is that he did not take such undue advantage for nothing. Interesting language. There was an advantage. He got a notice. 7 days. So, he didn't lament or wail or go through any of that stuff. He immediately fixed his mind on the, with full concentration, the paraphernalia of kingdom, of being a king, was discarded. That was, in other words, he was detached. He was using it or having it or maintaining it for purpose of service only. And when that service requirement was no longer there, with full detachment, no regret, not like disdain or disgust either, or fear, he fixed his mind on 7 days, 7 nights, without eating, without sleeping, without drinking water, fixed his mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. And by so doing, he got shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord by that opportunity. So, facing death notice, whether it's ourselves, the question was raised yesterday, what about persons close to us who may get their death notice or they're gone? What do we do? So, the example of Maharaj Parikshit tells us. And supposing we're dealing with somebody that doesn't have that same preparation as Maharaj Parikshit throughout life, we can move things in that direction as much as the individual is prepared to receive. And it's remarkable what notice of death does to the sobriety of individuals. Some persons don't. I've seen it. They don't move. They're somehow in another place. But most persons start becoming very theistic, very concerned about God's shelter. So we're getting these in our devotional families. We're giving the members of the families the opportunity from, as Maharaj pictured, from childhood, or even before conception, and then during the stage of conceiving the child, and throughout, so that soul has the best opportunity. And throughout life, you know, we can go on like it's not going to happen, but we should know it's going to happen. And we don't know when it's going to happen, but it for sure will happen. And how to, the Sanskrit here is akuto bhayam, a life of fearlessness. In speaking, Prabhupada would refer to that phrase, akuto bhayam, a life of fearlessness. There are these cliches out there these days, no fear, like grrr, you know, macho, no fear, I'll do anything and have no fear. And it's a bluff. It's ignorance and it's a bluff. The position of no fear is that one is protected. And that sense of being fully protected is not from our own strength, our own assembly of externals. Here's a brief part of Prabhupada's purport, and then we'll end. Material knowledge means ignorance of the knowledge of one's own self. Philosophy means to seek after the right knowledge of one's own self, or knowledge of self-realization. And he says it the other way around. Without self-realization, philosophy is dry speculation or a waste of time and energy, putting it bluntly. Waste of time and energy. Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right knowledge of one's own self. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can get free from material attachment and enter into the kingdom of fearlessness. This material world is fearfulness. Its prisoners are always fearful, as within a prison house. In the prison house, no one can violate the jail rules and regulations, and violating the rules means another term of existence of prison life. Similarly, we, in this material existence, are always fearful. This fearfulness is called anxiety. Everyone in this material world and all species of life is full of anxieties, either by breaking or without breaking the laws of nature. Liberation of mukti means getting relief from these constant anxieties. This is possible only when the anxiety is changed to devotional service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a chance to change the quality of anxiety from matter to spirit. This is done in the association of a learned personality, a philosopher like the self-realized Shukadeva Goswami, the great son of Vyasadeva. Maharaj Pariksit, after receiving warning of his death, took advantage of this opportunity by association with Shukadeva Goswami and achieved the desired result. And he concludes by saying, Bhagavat Saptahas are useless. The person that we hear from should be a qualified person. And when the right message is heard from the right person, and we hear in the right mood, the right attitude, that position of complete shelter. So of the personality of Godhead is factually experienced. At the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami has completed the narration, of course it could have gone on by further questions, but Maharaj Parikshit says to Shukadeva Goswami, "I'm ready. Let this mystical snake bird come or not come. I'm prepared." Because that fearlessness was factual, not a bluff. The factual fearlessness was his mind is fixed in the personality of Godhead, and when that's there, whatever the shape of duality doesn't move the mind. Because it's duality, it's not, the reality is fixed, and that the process of becoming fixed has been explained. Hearing in this proper manner. So the glorification of Maharaj Parikshit is being offered by the Brahmanas, that this is the nature of this child. He will have such a nature, and the events of his life will unfold in such a way that he will have the opportunity and he will seize the opportunity in the proper way. Some of you may know in the Chicago Yatra here, Pralambaha. Any of you know Pralambaha? Certainly Donna Kelly knows Pralambaha, Premananda. Before most of you even started your Krishna consciousness, Pralambaha was the head cook, and every morning he dressed Kishore Kishori. That was his program. He'd get up, chant, dress Kishore Kishori, go to the kitchen and cook the Rajbhog offering, and then go home and cook the evening offering and put Kishore Kishori to bed. He did it for years. When he was coming out of Gurukula, he became that kind of a devotee. And something that I heard Pralambaha say over and over again, Prabhupada said, at the end, you have to fly your own plane. You heard him say that ever, Donna Kelly? It was like one of his favorite. So fly your own plane means, like a pilot, you can practice and practice, and now they have all these, you can just sit in front of a computerized thing and you're practicing flying, and then you get in the air, you're the co-pilot, and then you can control but when the time of death is, there's nobody in the other seat, you got to fly the plane. The time of death is, no one else can help you. Certainly, you can receive mercy and that's help, but the choices of how you, where you direct your consciousness, it's your relationship with Krishna. And so life is a preparation for that. So we can live our life presently, not like afraid of death, but preparing that any moment it could happen. So we don't know that, you know, we're going to get in our car and go to the next place and we're going to get there. Or, you know, the end of the day we'll be back where we started from. We don't know. We don't know. There's that uncertainty, and where there's uncertainty, what's around the corner, we don't know. If around the corner is something awful like death, we would be fearful. And thus we're fixed on how to lead our lives presently. That's the Bhagavatam's message. It's the whole text is framed in the circumstance of Maharaj Parikshit's death is impending. So how does he prepare himself? How do we prepare ourselves to go back to Godhead in a fearless state? Dhruva Maharaj was so fearless that when the Vaikuntha Vimana came to take him to the spiritual world, as he was walking to the Vaikuntha Vimana, death personified approached him, and he stepped on his head as he ascended into Vaikuntha Vimana. fearless, such as the quality of a great devotee, feeling fully protected by the personality of God. So it's a cultivation to come to that stage of being so spiritually connected. And with that, a natural detachment from the things that otherwise our life is filled with, attachment-wise. So any questions or discussion? Rati?
I do not respond.
Rati?
Guru Maharaj, I'm recently been hearing that the application of principles in different circumstances, I mean, the principles are the same, but how do we apply the same principles in the different circumstances we face in life? How do we get good at that?
You're making a statement or asking a question?
Question.
Okay. How do we get good at that? Be in touch with Super Soul and Super Soul Guide. Okay, what's the Super Soul channel? It's our purity. Our natural consciousness is that. So it's just, it's the purity that comes from how we chant the holy name. For starters, is the most powerful means of making our connection with Krishna. How we chant Hare Krishna. And from that most powerful chanting of Hare Krishna, and being present in our relationship with Krishna while we're doing the other things. But the strength for that being present with Krishna is are being present with the holy name. That's the root. And following behind that one is practice. Not just, you know, living a long life and that then you know by practicing and making so many mistakes automatically, by making so many mistakes I'm going to understand how to apply things. But opportunities through, you know, one follows the other. Krishna is a wonderful instructor. If we make choices that are mistakes, Krishna will help us understand. If we're tuned into the Krishna channel, as we're going down the path of a mistake, we'll hear a lot of static, like you took a wrong turn. You know, it can be intuitive. You just feel, I don't feel right with this. But there's some signal with the Krishna sending that says, you know, you made a wrong turn. Go back to the fork in the road and go to the other direction. And a third is the association of wise people that can help us understand how to apply principles in a proper way. Mahajano, Yena, Katasa, Panta, ultimately these, the great, great authorities, how they, but each circumstance is going to be a little different than, and so there has to be some familiarity with the scriptures to help us apply a question you can ask yourself in a circumstance that you're not sure about the application is, what would my Guru Maharaj do in this situation? You may not have the answer, but if you bring your consciousness to that place, you're more likely to get Krishna channeled than not. I'm sorry. You want to try?
Yes, ma'am. I just want to comment on the opening statement Maharaj said about the parampara system and the devotees who have the devotional experience and my Apollo Vrindavan. So I'd like to share a little of mine. Last September I was in Vrindavan for just about 2 weeks, and although so many times I've been to Vrindavan, I had little good experience, but at the last visit in September, when I left Chicago, I was pretty all the way to Sri Prabhupada's deities, Krishna Balaram, Balasham, to have a little more mercy on my path. And it so happened that at the very next morning, Indra and devotees allowed me to do the morning section of the kirtan from 3:30 in the morning until 4:30, which was very, very late. And later, in the evening, I will join Indra and devotees in there again. Of course, I thank them with my heart, not openly, for that opportunity within the deities of Sri Prabhupada, because when I left Chicago, I thought I really wanted to spend so many times within the temple praying to the devotees of Sri Prabhupada. I didn't share it, but anyone asked me about, when you go to Vrindavan, everyone asks you, how was your trip? And I shared it with them. And one thing I have said to them, that if you happen to go to the holy town, Vrindavan or Mayapur, just don't go there for one day. Don't just go there in the morning or leave in the evening, because you have to spend at least overnight or a couple of days with the devotees within the temple and the deities, and then you could come back and share your experience with the devotees and tell them, it is one time in your life, you must visit Mayapur Vrindavan, which I will continue going myself. That's all.
You can't be fearless in the while holding on to a bodily conception of life. And part of bodily conception of life is pride. So the root is not exactly pride. The root is the bodily conception. The root cause of all suffering is ignorance. Prabhupada said that so many times. And ignorance means mistaken identity of self. As the original ignorance of this world. And that acceptance of the body as the self is, we got a body because of our rebellious spirit towards Krishna. That's the root of that ignorance. We have to let go of our rebellious attitude towards Krishna if we want to become free from the bodily conception of life. And with that goes pride and everything else. You do the battle against pride and hold on to the bodily conception of life and you lose. Practically understand it. Well, it's just a fact. Srinivas said that that was the condition of Ramchandra Kaviraj, and that was the condition of Ramchandra Kaviraj. Is your question, how can I come to that position myself? Or how can we understand that anybody can have that kind of consciousness?
I was thinking because it seems to me aren't we like bypassing intelligence? Because
no, it's not. It's not bypassing intelligence. It's accepting with intelligence, with careful scrutiny, the limitation of my intelligence. It's not blind faith, it's reasoned faith. It's not bypassing intelligence. Nice exposition on this subject, like in a whole book, is Tamal Krishnamuraj's writings when he went back to SMU and did papers to get his undergraduate degree before he went to Oxford to get his PhD. He chose this topic because he was fascinated by it. And Tamal Krishnamuraj, when he applied himself to something, he didn't do it 20%, 40%. It was 100+%. So he was fascinated by the topic of faith and reason. Or maybe the other way, reason and faith. But it's a theological question that different religions have approached in different ways, and different religious philosophers have approached in different ways. And as a practicing person, how do we apply that? So as Vaishnavas, how do we apply that? Because we have this disciplic succession. And it's, you know, the messages are very explicit. You know, even fundamental things like, is there a soul? Is there God? Is God with form? Is that form with two hands holding a flute, standing in a threefold bending position with a peacock feather and smiling? Faith or reason? Take any topic of our Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings are so, and then the application of those things in our life. It's an essence topic. Faith and reason, not or. And you go, don't just be the armchair person, you go as far as you can with your intelligence, and you realize it's beyond my capacity. Listen, you know, take chanting of the holy name. Try to go make your college best effort with all that stuff that, you know, that high powered fuel that's in your tank, and try to go as far as you can into the holy name, and you realize I can't. The mind's too flickering. So I'm dependent on something else to go there. And with reasoned, I'll place my faith in Krishna to go there. And you go there. And not otherwise. Etc. Just take the application in anything of life. Instead, there's this other thing that often happens, is people just sit back and pull their chin and, you know, try to figure it out. Which Prabhupada just got through saying is useless. So that's misuse of so-called intelligence. It's called the mental platform, where one can't decide which shoelace to tie first. You can't decide anything from that platform, even material things. So one has to come to this position of the reasoned position is, I need to place my faith in some higher authority. And I'm discriminating, discerning about which higher authority. Not just anybody that comes along in the landscape of my life and says, I'm that higher authority. What is that higher, what, with reason, what is, where do I place them in faith? And then, so Ramchandra Kaviraj did that. He was, he had all assets, highly intellectual. He was endowed with all features of piety. He was very beautiful in his appearance and very opulent and very this and very that. And he realized, I should place everything over here at the feet of this personality. Absolutely. Not conditionally. With reason. To say the opposite of what you said, in order to come to that position, one's intelligence needs to be more strong than the person that holds on to the strength of their little torch, little flashlight of intelligence to find truth. It takes stronger intelligence to become a devotee than it does to be a speculator. To take shelter. The current is moving swiftly the other direction. Downstream. We want to go upstream. Yes, Premananda?
Our stream, the preaching institution that you were describing, that every devotee here trained, supposed to be preaching, and the highest principles, religious principles are there in our scriptures, and the receptivity of the general public to that has not been like so much because of this nature of this world. But in the context of the present day emphasis so much on clean core technology and we should cultivate more and learn to live simply and within the means and all these things, the entire world is realizing that. So even though they are not understanding that from a spiritual perspective, they are understanding it because there is a need for
it. Yeah, there's pain. They don't like pain.
Yeah, and so, but there is now so much emphasis on that. And so in that context, do you foresee more receptivity from a, for our teachings to the general public?
I see both. I see continued chaos. You know, there are people that are highly invested out of selfish motivation to drive that, you know, the previous program forward. And I see that there are a lot of people that will do the armchair talk and do nothing of going in a different direction. I don't see a whole lot changing. But what I do see on the positive side is there are some persons who conceptually will gravitate towards that, but you know, are not so much prepared to change their lifestyle in a spiritual direction, or you know, they'll take the mode of goodness to be spiritual and not shelter God to be spiritual. But there will be some persons who will take shelter of God. And they want it in a very real way. They'll say the same thing that you said in two different ways. Devaramitra Swami was sharing with me just 2 weeks ago. He was in Los Angeles and he had read something about UCLA, and he said that I personally take UCLA as like, you know, the melting pot of America. Because when you go to UCLA, you see, you know, not just white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, but you see everything. You know, a lot of Oriental people, young people going to school there. And, you know, whole mix, everything. And a recent survey showed that some very large percentage of, you know, you can give the statistic, but a large percentage of the undergraduates want this kind of like a rebellious spirit towards the previous generation's choices of moving the direction of society, you know, economy and that, all what you just said, and they're looking for alternatives. And a study that Pragosh in Ireland shared with me, that a study in the UK, Europe, and in America, undergraduates, when asked the question, what do you want your careers to be? And what's the decision that you're using for your career? It is something like 80% were saying, I want to make a difference. It's not the California one was, they want to do it different. And this one was, I want to make a difference. So taking responsibility for the direction of the future. So they're looking for alternatives. It's a good sign. And having said that, I'll go back to what I said before. I don't see people changing a whole lot. They're very attached. And there are some strong drivers moving those attachments. Like at Penn State, this it was 2 years ago, the paradox of progress was the topic, and the devotees made a specific attempt to promote it, to advertise about it in the humanities, right? And the buildings. So it was a very large turnout, and it turns out, as I was speaking, there was a large group that all came from one professor's class, and the one professor gives a class for a whole semester on this very same topic that I was speaking about. And that very same topic is, we're headed in the wrong direction. We have to change direction. Because it's like we're in a train, and it's moving at 90 miles an hour towards a brick wall. It's about, you know, 40 feet thick. And it's real. There's a brick wall. It's going to crash. And one of the students raised his hand and said, you know, all of what you're saying resonates very much with the message that we're hearing in our class. And I'll say that I don't believe any one of the students that knows all this stuff so thoroughly is going to change their lifestyle one bit. Myself included. Because I don't want to scale down my standard of living. I have my expectations. I want wealth. And with that wealth, I want to enjoy. And I don't think anybody in our class is going to change their... So there's talk, but action is a whole other thing. So there are, you know, the green thing. And then it just becomes, it's so watered down, it's ridiculous. It just becomes another commercial thing. Because the whole program is driven by consumption. People are greedy. And you know, it doesn't change just by, oh, it's a problem. We have to consume green. It doesn't change the problem. The root is the heart. So it's a great opportunity for preaching. But when we cast the net, we should be, this is my perspective, we should be prepared to find a lot of people that aren't really committed to the essence. They're committed to form, but not essence. But we'll also find some people that are committed, that they're, because of that way of thinking, they'll be more open to the essence. And I'm finding it by traveling around to colleges and speaking on different topics, and the students come up and speak, express, and share about... So for me, that's like a litmus test of society. It's a mood that's driving society. They want social change. They want you know, they want to do things differently. They want to make a difference. But, you know, to take the real deal, then, you know, it doesn't connect. There are some. And it's going to be a more prosperous preaching field, more, you know, going out over the next several years. And the fact that it's economic crisis and all that stuff, that doesn't make it a problem for preaching. It's good for preaching. I'll say it one more time. I don't see what's going to come back in that net, like necessarily a whole lot of people that want to commit themselves to essences, like becoming fixed in devotion to Krishna. Some. Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of support
can we expect for the developing of the farm communities in this? Pain. People don't like pain. So aversion to pain is going to be a great support. I'm serious. We have farm communities and nobody wants to live there. If they want to live there, they want to live, you know, middle class life, and that's their home. It's not like they want to live the principle. That's reality. We have the farm projects already. The land's there. Nobody wants to live there and do it. They'll talk about it.
Bhagavad Sattva and things like that, it doesn't really produce any good results, as you mentioned. What if our own congregation, growing congregation, engages in something called 24-hour Ramayana recital? And basically, it doesn't even, it's not even like anybody's listening to anything that's being read, it's a mechanical process.
The benefit will come if the speaker is qualified, whether it's 24 hours or 7 days or 5 minutes. And minus the qualified speaker, you have what's not going to produce a good result.
So how are you...
Get a qualified speaker?
No. How do you address it to the people who are engaged in that? Because they are then being misguided.
Yeah. So then in a there are persons who want to be misguided. And there are persons who want to misguide. Or in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, this is a society of cheaters and cheated. So those that have faith, of those persons, those that have some degree of faith in Prabhupada's teachings, the principle can be explained. It would be better. Generally people don't like to be confronted. Like, you know, stick a gun in their ribs or a knife in their ribs and say, you know, I don't want to do this, but I have to do it because, you know, you need this. But if it's done in a nice way, then it'll give some discerning persons an opportunity to hear that it's nice that you want to hear about Ramayana, and this is the standard that Prabhupada taught us. Has to be a qualified speaker. And what are the qualifications of a qualified speaker? It's abundantly found in the Bhagavatam. And minus those qualifications, you know, better that you direct your attention to something that's on these standards of what Prabhupada gave. And then they'll have to make their decision. Another answer is provide something that's better. One of the best antidotes for something that's going in the wrong direction is something that's so attractive that's going in the right direction. and being inclusive. Yes, Donna Kelly?
Maharaj, you were mentioning that when we read verses such as today's verses, that we shouldn't just think that it's like a nice history story, but we should actually see how we can practically apply the essence of the verses to our life. So I was wondering if here in Kali Yuga, with Lord Chaitanya's golden age, are we to expect that there's going to be an emperor like Richard or his descendants that are going to... Is that how the golden age is ultimately going to be successful?
Prabhupada doesn't give an indication like that. It's not like it couldn't happen, but it's not that Prabhupada said that's how it will become different. Rather, he gave the formula of engaging everyone. So the weight of making change was placed upon his followers collectively. So by the main means was not having a Krishna conscious king or ruler. That wasn't the expectation. The expectation was that all of us should engage in the preaching movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributing books and holding sankirtan and sanghas, where so he set the example of how he saw bringing about change. He also personally, and so that means those who are of that spiritual stature, regardless of age, but of spiritual stature to influence leaders, to try to influence leaders. But it's not necessarily that one of them is going to become a king, but they're already in a position of leadership. So to influence their way of thinking towards Shuddha Bhakti, so we should be doing that. Not just interfaith, but influencing their way of thinking. We can call it whatever the name, but that's the intended. So in the scientific community, in the religious community, in the leadership group, just like Bhakti Chumaraj delivered a lecture at the UN, because one of his disciples works at the UN, so some arrangement was made for him to speak, and it was dynamic, his message. Now, how far that penetrated the hearts of people that are used to, you know, milk toast and smoothies, I don't know. But the message was there. So, in these different communities of persons who are not practicing Shuddha Bhakti, to provide them and implore them to take this up, perhaps in their own, you know, in their own theology. Like Bhakti Tirthamar shared with me that he had many disciples who were ministers of this church, that church. And they didn't become Hare Krishna temple presidents. They were ministers of this church with a large congregation. And they were speaking the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in language that their congregation would accept. It was Sanskrit terms, but it was, and he gave me examples. So he saw that was a way of bringing about change. And that, you know, he took that approach. He was linking himself with political leaders all over the world. So he's not with us anymore. But that was an approach. Not necessarily, you know, they become tilak wearing high court judges, but that's a formula that Bhaktisiddhanta said, referring indirectly to his father. But you know, Krishna consciousness will be successful when we find persons who are in that very respected position wearing tilak, meaning, you know, externally, not just internally, the signs of a Vaishnava. So, but how to get there you know, that Barack Obama keeps a Hanuman Murti in his pocket for good luck. You know, that's we got to go a little further than that.
So we don't have a description of the golden age that we expect to see. You know, we hear so much talk of new world order or government. There's no prophecy like that.
No.
Lord will one day rule the world again.
Nothing explicit that I'm aware of. I know when Prabhupada was directly asked this question, Swamiji, your movement is growing so fast here in America. One day, they may want to elect you as the president. Would you accept? And Prabhupada laughed and said, no. We're not wanting to be. We can give advice to those who are. But on the other hand, he encouraged Balavanta to run for mayor in Malanta and the In God We Trust party. But it wasn't so much that he wanted him to become the mayor as much as it was a forum for presenting the message of Krishna consciousness. That's what Prabhupada wanted, to bring about change, is bring that message into the attention of the public for mass change. So you can't have mass change without quality, because purity is the force. So we can't just focus on purity without preaching. Then we become cloistered, and the rest of the world continues to go down, and it's a saintly person who can't bear that. So that balance needs to be there. But it's not a world order kind of prophecy that I've come across anywhere. Anything else? Okay. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Surya Nishtha Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.